Chair recognizes Representative from Blue Hill, Representative Schatz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, women and men of the House. First of all, I stand up in support of the current motion, primarily so that stronger amendments might be made following that passage. And I am disappointed and but not surprised at the different takes on what we've all experienced in our committee. Certainly, and I want to go on record as well, the bill that is focusing on the SMU, the special management unit, if you will, is just that. It's not a look at the entire penal system, the correctional system that people have worked so hard to put together. There are many good things that are happening there. There are many incredibly creative and supportive administrators and staff that are at work there. So this bill should not be, or this resolve, and certainly anything that would come forward after this, should not be seen as a condemnation of those hardworking people in this very difficult system. Going to the 10.5-hour hearing that at least the one I experienced, which sounds a little bit different than maybe what others had experienced, half of the testimony did come from people who experienced life in the SMU, families of those people. There were individuals who are considered experts in the field of corrections. People, when I received my master's in correctional administration from the University of Colorado, these are people that were writing textbooks similar to the ones that I read and the background that I received in that field. So I think these were not only credible, they were very expert witnesses and gave testimony that featured what kind of things happen to people that are subjected to what our prisoners are subject to in the SMU. And indeed, a month and a half ago when I visited the SMU, there were 120 some people in that confinement. That confinement is a 7 by 12 or 14 foot cell. You're in there 23 hours a day, sometimes 24 hours, but mostly 23, 1 hour off for recreation, which takes place in a confined area. You get 3 showers a week. You get 3 books a week. You get some writing materials. There's very little opportunity to interact. Your meals are brought to you through a slot in the door. That slot in the door is also used to remove waste matter and other body fluids, not always clean. Now, in my mind, you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So this is solitary confinement. It reaches those levels of definition that people who are familiar with solitary confinement would validate as being just that. We asked for the working session a list of people who were confined at that time, and we did get a list, and we got the number of days those individuals have been in solitary confinement. And they varied from a few days up to 2 years. But many of them were over 100 days. And so this, you know, the idea that people go in there, they get a little fixed, a little separation, you know, quiet time in the corner, like a child watching TV. By the way, of course, there are no TVs or radios or other stimulation, as your child might have in their quiet room. So I think that it was clear to some of us that what happens in this segregation is a very personal experience with each one of those inmates. For some people, they may have had mental illness going for them before they went in, and certainly after a number of days in there, if they had any tendencies, they would start to surface as well. This is not what we want to have happen in any part of our system. And again, I'm talking about the special management unit. I'm not talking about people who are in the regular population, who take advantage of programs, who you know, seem to be able to have some benefits. These are people that, if we don't look at their treatment modes and do something about this and pass a more rigorous bill, then we are creating a public safety issue beyond what we can imagine, because these people indeed do leave the institution and they come back mostly to Portland, Bangor, the service center towns. And unless we can work with them inside the institution to make them a safer individual, they're going to come back home and create more problems, and the public safety issue there is magnificent. So please understand that what we're striving for gets to that point, and I would hope that when you vote for this resolve, you be open to other remedies as well, which I think are sorely needed. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Chair recognizes Representative from Eddington, Representative Pratt.
Madam Speaker, men and women of the House, fellow workers, I've been thinking a lot about what I was going to say today, and it struck me how this issue and all the dealings and discussions that we've had have affected me more than any other one I've worked on since I've been here. It seems to me I wasn't expecting that to be the case when we started this either, to be honest with you. But the more I've gotten into it, and the more I've talked about it, the more I've spoken about it, the more I've learned about it, it's so much more tangible and human to me than much of what we deal with here. And that's why I think we have all the emotion that we have around it, and that's good. Because we're talking about something significant. We're talking about this idea of solitary confinement, and it's a type of control that's been around for a long time. The Quakers tried it back in Philadelphia in the 1600s. They found that the idea of quiet introspection and isolation that they put incarcerated folks through ended up having the opposite effect of what they were looking for. And here we are today, with more science and more studies, and great steps have been taken. I absolutely admit that. I'm not going to refute that. But that's no reason to pretend that there's not a problem or to say we can do better. We have the opportunity to do today something that no one really expects us to do, which is tackle a tough public policy issue and move forward with some guidelines for the future. And I ask, if not now, when? We've heard many people don't believe there ever needs to be a when, apparently. But if not us, who? No one's going to get reelected on running on a platform of prison reform. I know that. No one's going to get reelected going to bat for what some would see as throwaway people, or people who aren't worthy of our time and our consideration. And I'm not suggesting the DOC, Department of Corrections, thinks that, and I'm not suggesting that there are many people in this body that think that, but I think there is a pervasive feeling throughout our culture that once you mess up and you get sent away, we get to wipe our hands of you. And I can't do that. Mental illness in prisons and in society as a whole is undoubtedly a much larger issue than we can or aim to tackle in this bill. What we can do is work on a specific facet of this issue, and to me that's mental illness and its connection with solitary confinement. It goes by a lot of different names. You've heard already some today: segregation, special management unit, isolation, the whole, etc. And you've already heard some say today that it's not a problem, that we don't have that here in Maine. I will not argue that the special management unit at the Maine State Prison is the same physical construction as the Hanoi Hilton, but I will argue that the psychological effects based on that isolation are, in fact, relatively the same. 23 to 24 hours a day in a 7x12 concrete cell with no radio, no TV, and very little interaction with any human contact whatsoever, is tough for me to not call that solitary confinement. And all the science that I've read, the peer-reviewed and court cases reviewed by courts, assert that prolonged isolation, regardless of what it's called, at the very least exacerbates pre-existing mental illnesses, and at worst, induces mental illness, contributing to long-term mental health problems for those folks. I'm sure many would like this issue to go away. I'm sure leadership probably on both sides would like this issue to go away. There are so many important and pressing issues before us. I hear people saying, why are we dealing with this? Why are we worrying about these folks in jail when we've got good, hardworking people out there losing their homes? I can respect and I can understand that. But like it or not, these folks that are incarcerated are our citizens. And 95% of them will be let back out into our communities. This, to me, is a public safety issue for all citizens, for inmates, for the folks who work in the special management unit and the prisons as a whole, and the general public. 43 inmates were released directly from the SMU out into the public over the last 2 years. And it's possible, I feel, that we're doing more harm than good by doing this. We've heard in caucus the other day that number's going down. And that's great. I'm happy to hear that. I've heard, due to jail consolidation and a lot of the work that the Departments of Corrections have been doing, that we've been given some more elbow room, some more spaces to move people around. That's good progress. I'd like to see that result in fewer people in the SMU. But these people are our neighbors, and they are your constituents, and we've got to find a better way. I understand the job of corrections is a very difficult job. I don't envy what they have to go in there and do every day, and I know the resources are stretched thin. I have seen in my other job as a firefighter and a paramedic, you know, this discouraged that mental illness has, that we've seen out there on the streets. And I understand what these guards are seeing every day. And I have some horror stories as well, but I won't share them with you. In my job, we also have policies. We've heard a lot about policies. I've got a big, giant book of policies. Some of which seem to get followed every day, and some of which seem to get buried. I'm not here to judge or say who's following or not following policies, but I am here to say that one way to make sure it's followed is to come up with statute, is to come up with law. It's not my intention to micromanage an executive department. It's not. But it is my intention to create good public policy and a baseline or guidelines that the Department of Corrections can follow, and to set a bar that we as policymakers and elected officials are comfortable with, standing ready to assist the Department of Corrections in gaining or readjusting and shifting the resources necessary to reach a common goal of what I hope to see as a safe, humane, and restorative criminal justice system. This resolve, as written, fails to address the bulk of my concerns and the concerns of many of these of my colleagues in this body. And it's with great trepidation that I rise to urge its passage. And it's solely for the purpose of placing this in this body in a position to amend it to better address the issues of solitary confinement in Maine. The crux of the issue to me is, does this body condone the placing of pre-existing severely mentally ill people in a solitary or isolation type situation, contrary to what I've read in court decisions and consent decrees that find this practice as a potential violation of the Eighth Amendment, the United States Constitution? Let us move forward. Absolutely. I'm not known here for my consensus mongering or my incrementalism, and I know that. But in this case, I find it, however hard to swallow, imperative that we move forward and pass this resolve. We can and we will do better. It's a painful issue and a tough one. But I think about the words of my friends and fellow musicians, Ethan Miller and Katie B. Boverman. The source of my pain, this is a quote, is the source of my hope in the vision of what this world could be. We can always do better. We can always do better. I urge us to move forward, and thank you for your time.
Chair recognizes Representative from Newfield, Representative Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House. Last week we all got a kind of a small book from Jana Mills. It's got some pretty flowers on it with a gravestone. And the top of it says, he wants to see me dead. The 8th report of the Maine Domestic Abuse Homicide Review Panel, January 2010. Once a year, our judges come into this chamber to meet with us. And these same judges, when people commit heinous crimes or any crimes against the people, they decide whether they go across the river to Riverview or up north to one of our hospitals, or they go to jail. And if they go to jail, it's for good reason. Last week in the Press Herald, it shows a mother and father in front of the legislature in New Hampshire. John Cainton testified before the legislature Tuesday that 2 days before his daughter was killed, he showed up at the house, beat his wife, strangled her, threw her down the stairs. He got arrested and got released for $30 bail. But 2 days later, he came back, shot his mother-in-law in the back, and killed his wife. And what they were looking for from the legislature was that if that was a felony, he would have served 5 to 7 years. The Senate Judiciary Committee, which heard the testimony, recommended passage of the bill, which has already been passed in the House. It would make assault by strangulation a second-degree felony and carry a sentence of 3.5 to 7 years. The committee members said that they would recommend it become a first-degree felony, which carries a sentence of 7.5 to 15 years. Now, if we can't trust our judges to make a decision to send people that have mental problems to the mental hospital or people that are real criminals to jail, I don't know who's going to make that decision. Besides that, I think that we have guards, we have a commissioner that oversees these things. And I think our judiciary should make a decision whether we're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. I don't think we should make it a political thing. And I don't think this bill should pass. Thank you.
Chair recognizes Representative from Scarborough, Representative Flaherty.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, this is certainly a tough issue. But I would argue that it is good for this body to have this debate, because is it true that we've come a long way from the practices in our prisons from years ago? Absolutely. And do we trust and know that our corrections officers are doing the right thing? Without a doubt. And is it true that the laundry list of organizations and parts of our correction systems that Representative Sykes alluded to are, in fact, bringing the state in the right direction? I certainly would argue so. But as policymakers, we must also ensure that the laws of our state reflect the values of our society. Nearly 24 hours a day of solitary confinement without radio or television, without any human interaction, for days, weeks, months, and for years on end, does not reflect the values of this society. In an op-ed in the Bangor Daily News, which appeared February 26 of this year, Terry A. Cupper is a nationally recognized psychiatric expert on mental health effects of prison conditions, and David Maltz, a psychiatrist who practices right here in Brunswick, argued the following, quote, in solitary confinement, the prisoner is isolated from others in a cell nearly 24 hours per day. In Maine, the cell doors are solid metal, so the prisoner has to shout merely to be heard by staff or residents of adjacent cells. The prisoner eats meals alone in his cell and remains almost entirely idle with no programs to permit him to increase socially desirable skills. This is not, quote, the whole of yesteryear. The lights are on around the clock and the doors open by remote control. The isolation and idleness are near total. Staff pass by the cells and slide food trays through slots and doors, but meaningful communication rarely occurs. Moreover, they argue, quote, the isolation and idleness that cause psychiatric symptoms in relatively healthy prisoners
cause psychiatric breakdowns, severe affective disorders, and suicide crisis in prisoners with histories of mental illness. Stunningly, one half of prison suicides today occur among the 3 to 10% of prisoners in solitary confinement at any given time. End quote. Madam Speaker, with that type of insight and the evidence, I would argue that the practice of solitary confinement violates our Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. Specifically, in 1972, the Supreme Court of these United States ruled in Furman v. Georgia that, quote, there are then four principles by which we may determine whether a particular punishment is, quote, cruel and unusual. Those four principles, the Supreme Court goes on, are as follows. One, a severe punishment that is obviously inflicted in wholly arbitrary fashion. Two, a severe punishment that is patently unnecessary. Three, the essential predicate is that a punishment must not by its severity be degrading to human dignity, especially torture. And four, a severe punishment that is clearly and totally rejected throughout society. Madam Speaker, I would argue that the practices described in that BDN editorial regarding solitary confinement go far beyond the necessity for safety, and I would further argue that at least two of the principles outlined by the highest court in this country are clearly being violated. First, that many of the manners in which solitary confinement is employed are in fact degrading to human dignity. Moreover, that such punishment would be rejected throughout our society. And the court provides us further insight into this issue. In Trott versus Dulles, the court ruled that the Eighth Amendment, quote, must draw its meaning from the evolving standards of decency that mark the progress of a maturing society. In this great country, in this great society, have we not evolved in our treatment of human beings well beyond this type of use of solitary confinement? Have we not found better ways to control people? Don't we have more appropriate ways of enforcing our laws and rehabilitating our inmates? What does it say about our society that we can still condone this type of treatment? I would argue that the use of solitary confinement is in direct violation of the Supreme Court's rulings on the Eighth Amendment. And I would argue that our society has in fact matured. And I would further argue that it ought to be the job of this body, of policymakers for our state, to ensure that the laws do indeed reflect the values of our society. This is not an insult to the Department of Corrections. It is not meant to be so. But it is, and it should be, a statement of our greater conscience and a reflection on our better nature. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Chair recognizes Representative from Stockton Springs, Representative Magnin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, fellow members of the House. An act to ensure humane treatment of prisoners came across the committee's desk a while ago. And as a committee, we spent countless hours working on this bill. It would be unfair to say that anyone on the committee took the issue lightly or made their decision on their vote without considerable consideration. The special management unit exists to deal with three specific groups of convicted criminals. There is a disciplinary assignment to this special management unit for people who are disruptive and aggressive and hostile, whatever, and dangerous within the prison or in their unit pods. There is a protective custody component for individuals who need protection from other prisoners or that need to be isolated because they are a danger to the guards. And then there is a third assignment to the administrative unit. And according to the prisoners, the decisions assigning them there may be targeted or vague or sometimes considered arbitrary, although each prisoner is assigned to the SMU with a written reason for their assignment to the unit and a team to oversee this placement. prisoners end up in the administrative unit for longer periods of time than either of the other two units generally. There are problems. There are a large number of people in isolation, especially administrative. They are in isolation too long. The mentally ill are often sent there. It is very difficult to deal, especially with this particular issue, because it's so complex. And yet, unlike the state hospitals, where you can force medication on your mentally ill people who are having psychotic breaks or having other very complex reactions or episodes. In a prison, we can't do that. You can't force medications. And so they are withdrawn to isolation. And there is a mentally ill, there is a unit for them that fills up, unfortunately, too fast. And in the unit, the SMU, the level of isolation is too profound. There is no music. There are very few distractions. It's not good. However, these problems that I've just mentioned are not mentioned as a slap in the face or an insult to the staff and the guards. Many of these problems are leftover pieces of the culture of the prison that have been worked on but haven't been completed in the process of restructuring this whole prison system that's been going on for the past number of years. It's part of the process, and it isn't perfect. So what can we do? There are solutions. Well, I suppose we can eliminate the special management unit, although I would not think that that would be a good idea, because even though there is some evidence that there are new and internal discipline methods that can be used to manage people in different ways and avoid coming, especially for administrative reasons. However, right now, this would be completely unreasonable for the safety of the staff and the other prisoners. The staff, especially, who work in under really stressful conditions and do an heroic job. I suppose we could create legislation to enforce the existing policies and procedures, but they're there. The policies and procedures are there. If we do legislatively press these issues, there is an unfortunate fiscal note that might be part of it, where at the insistence of the prisoner of having an advocate to a hearing, it could become very costly. Although in the original bill amendment, it said they would be paid for by the prisoner, but that would be challenged immediately in court by penurious prisoners who have no way of paying for those kinds of additional support. So there is a balanced approach that we can take. One part of this would be to allow the new warden a chance to establish her management procedures and style and give her the support of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee and the Department of Corrections and the Board of Corrections and anyone else to whom she must report. Another way of going about this with a balanced approach would be to provide the prison staff with new behavioral techniques to use with the problems for the administrative type, especially that gets assigned to these units. They have to understand and buy in because they are the huge resource to this process. And they cannot assume that by looking closely at what they do, that it's any different from what we asked the teachers last week, to think about evaluations in a positive way, to think about them as a way of improvement. The message to corrections about evaluations and about moving the process forward in this area is not as punishment, but as a guide for improvement. I think they can understand that, I'm sure. So the policies and procedures are there. They're sound. They're reasonable. The culture is perhaps a little wonky. But you know what? We haven't even pinpointed what the exact problem is. And that's why I would like you to think about supporting this resolution that's listed on the board, where we don't legislate, but we insist that the policies and procedures which do exist be scrutinized under the mental health working group of the Board of Corrections, that the policies and procedures which are existent and followed are understood and the processes in place, and to give them an opportunity to define specific problems and craft solutions to the problems they identify. It would be critical to the importance of this process that we gain not only the cooperation of the staff, but the input and the valuable information that they possess after having experiencing their life through the eyes of corrections. And finally, we need to give the new warden an opportunity to see if she can make the changes in that culture of the prison so that the use of administrative isolation can be reduced greatly, especially in the area of the administrative isolation, but in all areas, and perhaps eventually eliminated. Regardless of the outcome today, the SMU and its concerns have seen the light of day and will be dealt with in a concerned and professional manner, especially by the Department of Corrections, who are thoughtful, and they will take action, and they will make changes, and they will do their best. It's not the cat with the canary. It's the cat taking charge, I guess you might say. And they will do it in a professional manner. Organized, thoughtful, and they work hard. And I'd like to thank Representative Schatz for bringing the issue forward, because it did bring it to the light of day, and for reminding us that after the last week, which was a religious holiday for so many of us, to remember that those who are the least among us. So thank you. I will follow my chair's light and vote with Representative Haskell on this issue. Thank you.